Show has paid WGCH a broadcasting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Good morning, Greenwich. It's 9:30 on Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk with me, Jen Graziano. I'm the co-owner of Cox & Graziano Funeral Home, located at 134 Hamilton Avenue. And as part of my family's commitment to the community, I come to you every Wednesday talking to people that matter, about things that matter, in a place that matters, right here in Greenwich. Although today I'm doing something that I specialize in, according to my family and friends, and that's talk to myself. But my guest was unable to actually be in studio today.
I've never noticed you do that.
I don't. Well, you know, I'm pretty good here because I'm always talking to one of you.
Oh,
but
that's true.
Sometimes my best conversations are with myself. I get me, so it works out well.
Coffee does that to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Next thing you know, I'm having all kinds of conversations with myself.
I think wine might do that to most people, right. But if coffee works. But it's good. I'm talking to Bob and Tim Judge. Welcome to my Facebook Live viewers, and welcome to the listeners on The Voice of Greenwich, 1490 WGCH. And we're going to go on with the show because that's what happens with the live media. So I was planning to speak with Tina Corlett, and she's from the town of Greenwich, the Department of Social Services, and she does assistance with Medicaid and Medicaid planning to the residents. We have cause to work with her at the funeral home as well because funeral planning is a part of the Medicaid process, and it is a process, folks, and it's a complicated process, and there's ever-changing, ever-evolving information. You don't know what's right, what's wrong, or what's made up along the way. But I'm going to, we're going to talk a little bit about what Tina would have said herself in person. I am no expert, so I ask that you verify it and contact Tina at the end of the show. If you have any questions, I will provide her contact information. And who knows, maybe she'll surprise us and call in or come in. And my apologies to everybody for the nasal sounding today. It's a stretch to be speaking, but we'll do the best we can. So let's talk about Medicaid. Tim and Bob, any prior knowledge of Medicaid and how you're eligible or what it covers, what cost it covers? Because we're going to take a Medicaid eligibility test in here today.
Why do I need Medicaid if I have Medicare? What's the deal here?
Well, Medicare only goes so far.
Oh.
You know, people, there's a lot of misconception about what Medicare will cover. For example, hospitalization, you know, it covers up to the first 100 days and then you have to be transferred to a facility. Medicare is not that all-reaching blanket of protection for healthcare needs. And Medicaid kicks in as a government subsidy when there's a financial eligibility. And as part of qualifying, there has to be a spend down of assets. And there's a lot that goes in, a lot of planning. You have to really look ahead down the road, you know, and project your financial situation down the line. Because if it's something that you think might apply, you know, you have to start getting assets out of your name and transferring out of your name and depleting your assets. But you have to do that within the requisite time. The
so
government.
When my dad, we ended up putting him in a nursing home.
Okay.
Because he contracted Alzheimer's disease,
mm-hmm.
and couldn't really take care of himself. But by that, we'd already kind of seen this coming, and we had transferred the house to our name, my brother and I, and he had no assets. So Medicaid, I guess, is what ended up paying for it.
Absolutely. And again, the timing is so important. There's what's called the look back period. So it's,
and that has changed, too.
It has
when
changed.
We did this, this was many years ago. I think it was 5 years.
I believe it's 8 years in Connecticut.
It's
5 or 8. New York and Connecticut are different. But let's talk a little bit more because obviously you have some experience in this, Bob, so you can weigh in. Medicaid is defined as a wide-ranging health insurance program for low-income individuals of all ages. It's jointly funded by the state and the federal government. It provides health coverage for various groups of residents. So let's talk about our Connecticut residents here. This can include pregnant women, parents, caretaker relatives, adults with no dependent children, disabled individuals, and seniors. Today we're going to focus strictly on Medicaid eligibility for Connecticut seniors, seniors defined as 65 and older. And specifically, we're talking about long-term health care, whether it being home health care, adult foster home care, nursing home care, or assisted living facility. So, Bob, that's kind of really what we're talking about here. We're mm-hmm. talking about health coverage for those facilities such as that. So, fact that I did not know, Medicaid in Connecticut is also called Husky Health. Has anybody heard of that before? Oh, okay. Did you know it was connected to Medicaid?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. See, well, we all learned something today.
Yeah, I did.
You did or you didn't?
I've never heard of that.
I hadn't heard of it either.
Of course, I can see now where the name comes from. Right. It's obviously a Connecticut thing with the Huskies.
Yes.
UConn, yeah.
Yes. So it all ties in. So there are several different Medicaid long-term programs for which a senior in Connecticut can be eligible. The programs have slightly different financial and medical requirements as to which benefits they'll cover. But these requirements are further complicated with marital status, geographic location in the state, and there's a lot of different pathways that you can take to Medicaid eligibility. Let's start with institutional and nursing home Medicaid. So this is an entitlement program. That means anybody who meets the requirements will receive the assistance. You just have to qualify. It's provided only in nursing home facilities. Next, we have Medicaid waivers and home and community-based services. There's a limited number of eligibility spots for this. So it's not like that blanket, anybody who qualifies can get into the nursing home under this care. With the home care, it's a bit more stringent, the requirements for eligibility. So therefore, wait lists come into play. And we talk about it here on the show so much. A lot of people want to remain in their home. They want to age in place. There's a comfort to staying home. So it's interesting to see some barriers that might exist to that. Benefits are provided, however, if you meet the eligibility and you are selected. Benefits are provided at home for adult daycare and adult foster care or assisted living. Next, we have regular Medicaid for the elderly and disabled. And this is, again, an entitlement program, which means anyone who meets the eligibility requirements are able to receive the services, and the benefits will be provided to either the home or adult daycare, whoever was coming in to take care of you. So there is a Medicaid eligibility test, which I think might be helpful for people that are thinking, is this for me? Will this be for me? Can I apply? Like I said, there's probably more questions than answers out there. But let's go through the test together and let's see, you know, perhaps some listeners and viewers or people that you know of or loved ones or family members that you care for, we can see where you will fall on the spectrum. So the first question in determining eligibility on the Medicaid test is, for whom are you applying for Medicaid? It could be yourself, your spouse, your parent, or another loved one. Simple enough question. I think anybody would know the answer to that. And the next question is, what is the age of the individual applying for Medicaid? Is it under 65? Is it under 65 and legally disabled? Is it between 65 and 85? Or is it over 85? So again, age is a big determinant, and not just age, but disability status as well. The next question they will ask is, where does the individual applying for Medicaid currently reside? Is it at home, in a friend or family member's home, in an assisted living facility, in a rehab facility for temporary care, or in a nursing home facility for permanent reasons? Next, they'll ask, for what reason is the individual applying for Medicaid? And for some of the potential answers here, are you seeking Medicaid for nursing home care, for assisted living care, for home health care, or for none of the above? Is this just something that you are applying for this long-term health care coverage, but not necessarily any of these facilities apply? The survey will go on to ask, is the applicant a veteran or widow or widower of a veteran? And if so, did they serve during wartime? So again, another determinant of eligibility would be your veteran status, which is good to know because it's always nice to know when, you know, there's not enough we can do to thank veterans, but certainly anything will help. It'll go on to ask, what is the total monthly household income of the individual or couple applying for Medicaid? Now, some of the breakdowns for this. They're going to ask, are you receiving individually or combined less than $1,200 a month, between $1,200 and $2,200 a month, between $2,200 and $2,400 a month, or over $4,400 a month? So again, there's an eligibility that's based on financial need and requirement. So they're going to break down to see what the monthly household income is. So next, does the individual applying for Medicaid have a life insurance policy? And if so, what is the face value? And that really comes into play so often. We know when people are coming in to prearrange their funerals as part of the Medicaid requirement, setting up that irrevocable trust, that might be a familiar term to some. You know, sometimes families are told they can cash in, surrender the policy, cash in and apply those proceeds towards their funeral. Or they're just told that the policy could be assigned upon death. One of the reasons why I'm an advocate for clear, stringent rules, policies, and procedures so that when people are going through this process, they can have some black and white tangible rules in which to follow, and the social workers can as well. So they'll ask if you have life insurance. You can either have no life insurance or life insurance with the face value above or below a certain number. Moving on, does the individual applying for Medicaid own a home, and what is the value of their equity? So again, they're going to ask, what is the value of your home if you in fact own a home at all? What are the total financial assets of the individual or couple applying for Medicaid, not including their home? So there are spousal exemptions, I know, in applying for Medicaid where the non-applicant spouse would be able to keep the home. This is when it gets tricky, when first spouse to plan or first spouse to pass and then the second spouse. There's a lot of differences in what is owed to whom and whom is eligible for what. So I always say speak to a really good elder attorney to help you plan this down the road. You don't want to lose your house. You don't want to lose your assets. You want to be able to pass down to generations that which you've accumulated. And long-term planning is the best way to achieve this. The time to plan is when you're happy and healthy and not sick and not suffering. So it's hard to reconcile that sometimes.
Very counterintuitive. You don't feel like you want to talk about it when you're feeling good.
Absolutely. When you're on top of the world, it's the time to think about the time when you're not.
You know, I have a question about actually the first question.
Thank you. Somebody shut me up here.
Do you have to have power of attorney or anything if you're filing for your parents, say, or for someone else, any someone else?
The Medicaid application, to my knowledge, is an individual application. So if somebody is incapacitated and not of sound mind and body, I'm sure that's when a power of attorney would kick in. But for
if you can show that you are the child, mm-hmm. Do you still need that power of attorney, I wonder?
Though, you're applying for the Medicaid for the parent themselves.
Right.
So they're the ones that are going to be looked at. And if there's any type of incapacitation that they can't fill out the application, I'm sure you would be able to apply on their behalf as the child and not a power of attorney.
Uh-huh.
Again, this is all going to be fact-checked by Tina Corlett. I do recommend that people contact her following the show. But just from my own legal knowledge on that, I am an attorney in the state of Connecticut.
That's
we often
right.
forget about that. Power of attorney documents, though, they're very important to have, though. And I do suggest, again, this becomes part of the long-term plan. You have to, at some point, let's say if you have children, sit down with your adult children and strategize a plan. There should be somebody that could be your voice. God forbid a worst-case scenario. There are durable power of attorneys that survive certain criteria and characteristics. By no means is it a sign that you're giving up independence and you're not able to exercise your faculties and judgment, but it's really good to have a team in place, and as part of that team, your adult children. For those people who don't have children or don't have a spouse, it's all the more reason to have the proper people in place that would be able to speak and act on your behalf in the worst case, God forbid, scenario. So I'm a huge advocate of power of attorneys, huge advocate of having agent letters for disposition. That's something less commonly known that we'll touch upon as well. So moving back on, so Medicaid is now trying to assess a person. They're looking at a big picture. They're looking at assets. They're looking at net worth. And then they're going one step further to say, okay, if you take the home out of this equation, what is the remainder of net worth that is left behind? They're also going to look at what your estimated monthly out-of-pocket care costs. So, you know, that could be anything from less than $2,000 a month, between $2,000 and $25,000 a month. What does it cost you to live per month? They will analyze in determining your eligibility. And
okay,
that's
$2,000, that'll cover my cable bill. What about everything
else? No, exactly. And, you know, it's a subjective number, and it's regional. I mean, cost of living is largely dependent on where you live. So the numbers for Connecticut and Greenwich residents are going to be far different from somebody in the Midwestern part of the country. It's something, you know, it's a very subjective number. And even people within the same town are going to have much different cost of living needs. If you own your home, there's a much different cost of living versus rental or, you know, cost of eating, cost of clothing yourself, cost of healthcare, prescription drugs, ancillary healthcare costs. There's a lot that goes in. Do you do a monthly budget, anybody? Do you know what it costs you to live? You have a family of like five kids, two adults.
I work on a zero balance, and I go from there.
That's always a safe way to go, you know, where you stand there.
Back when I was applying for a mortgage, that was something that I was calculating fairly regularly. Lately, I've been ignoring it because I'm like, I don't want to even look at that right now.
I know. Who wants to think about that? And that's human nature, too. This is not stuff that we like get excited about to sit down and, you know, figure out the cost of living and the projected cost of living, because those costs, they're not fixed. They will change as time goes on. Our needs will change. Our needs of our family will change. I don't know. I just have one child that I'm responsible for, but boy, is there a financial drain from that little 7-year-old. Totally worth it. Love her dearly. Okay, getting back to Medicaid, though, we're going to look at the state in which they live in and then the county of that state in which they live in. Moving on, what benefits and or coverage does the individual applying for Medicaid currently have? They're going to want to see what else you have to subsidize you or to help pay for your care. For example, do you have Medicare? Are you on a veteran's pension? Do you have life insurance? Do you have burial insurance? Do you have Social Security disability? Or do you have none of the above? So again, looking at the big picture, seeing who the applicant is and what their worth is. How soon do you anticipate the need for Medicaid? And this is a great tool because, again, you don't have to need it today. But if you think it's a possibility for down the road, it's something worth at least going through these questions, taking the time to answer them, because it'll help give you an idea of, okay, if I were to need it, how likely am I to get it? And if it's not looking so likely because you have more than the requisite assets, it might be time to start thinking, how do I start shifting some of these out of my name into the names of my children or my heirs or my beneficiaries? This is a great tool to help you do some of that planning. Another question, is the applicant considering applying for Medicaid in a different state? It'll ask you some of your personal information, such as your name, your phone number, your email address, the best time to call. It'll have you do a little test to enter a number to make sure you are not a robot applying for Medicaid. Robots need not apply. The state is really broke enough. We don't need to pay for non-living creatures. And then somebody will get back to you. So, again, a really good idea just to sit down. If you're at the computer watching the show, you certainly have time to take the Medicaid test. So something I would definitely recommend. So, Bob, when your father was in a nursing home, how far in advance did you plan that? Did you know he was eventually going to have to go, or did he have just a rapid decline in health that caused you to have to place him there?
I think my brother and I noticed at a point when I started to live with him that this was necessary, that he needed my help. And I could be there. We just reached a point, though, where I couldn't be there as much as I needed to be there.
Right.
Somebody needed to be there.
And you want to be there, but it becomes an impossibility.
To be a nursing home.
Well, right, but you're all working. All have careers. And it's just a matter of everybody is so well-intentioned, and we want to be the caregiver for our family members. But life doesn't always allow that because we have jobs and we might have other family members at home that we're taking care of. Mm. Tim, I know you just, you lost your mom not long ago, and I know her care was so important to you. And you have a lot of kids, but you're one of many kids. Were you able to keep your mom at home the whole time, or did you have to allow for alternative care?
She was at home. We had hospice care come in towards the end.
Okay.
And, because there was 11 of us, we had designated, you know, health proxies and financial planners and all that stuff. So that was kind of all sorted out by my mother before, the end. So everybody stepped up when they needed to, and bigger decisions I wasn't involved in because they had already been made by my mom.
Which is so important. It's so important for you, for the senior themselves, to retain their voice in the process. And the only way you're going to have a say in what goes where and who goes where and where you go is if you exercise that voice while you can. And again, it comes down to having that hard discussion, that hard talk when you're happy and when you're healthy. And it doesn't mean that you're projecting something bad is going to happen. It just means that in that what if scenario, there's something in place and your children know. I mean, how grateful were you, Tim, that you knew what was happening?
You say what if. It's not what if, it's when. Because it's always when.
It's true.
It's never if. I mean, something always happens. It will happen to everybody. So,
none of us will escape it.
You know, very grateful. I mean, we were all very happy that my mom went exactly the way she wanted to. So there's not much more you can ask for that. So that was all her plan. And so we just, you know, did what she wanted to the best we could. And she was there at home when she exited. And that's what everybody
was
happy for.
So many people wish for that. You hear it all the time when people say they just want to be able to die at home. And there's something really beautiful about that. For some people, it just becomes an impossibility. But, you know, for you guys and for the Judge clan, I mean, nothing left unsaid or undone for your mom. So there's certainly a comfort that that has to give you. So, Bob, you had a different situation, though, where the care facility became necessary. Do you remember like a myriad of paperwork? Do you remember a difficult process of applying to get in? Was there a wait list for Dad? Was he local here?
Yes. Actually, we felt very lucky that we were able to get him into a location that was in Stamford. I don't think it exists anymore. But
okay.
Oh, geez, it might. I don't know. At any
What's the name of it?
It was a long time ago. Oh, I don't know.
But do you remember, I mean, was it an easy process or was it daunting? Was there a lot of paperwork and was he waiting to get in? Was it a smooth transition to get him in?
Actually, the professionals in the business jumped in once they realized that I needed some help.
Okay.
You know, it started out in a hospital situation where he had had a bad experience with some food. And we had to rush him to a hospital, and they then noticed that the situation was deteriorating very badly and said, hey, let's have a meeting.
Okay.
And they were very helpful, really guided my brother and I through this thing.
Well, when you're with the right people, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Especially in situations like that. I mean, you know, you either come from a medical background or you don't. So a lot of times we're lost in our laymen capabilities. So when you have good people guiding you, that must have been invaluable. But again, the moral of the story today is do your planning in advance. And when we're talking about Medicaid eligibility, if you think that Medicaid might be something that comes up down the road, then start looking at your assets today. We did the Medicaid eligibility test. I think it's great for everyone to go online together to do that. The site that I was on for that is MedicaidPlanningAssistance.org. So a wonderful site. The test is offered through the American Council on Aging. Wonderful resources there. MedicaidPlanningAssistance.org. Getting back to assets, what defines assets? Countable assets include cash, stocks, bonds, investments, promissory notes, credit union, savings, and checking account, real estate, even real estate of where you don't reside. You know, you might own that condo in Florida, that second home. But with Medicaid eligibility, there are many assets that are not counted. So there are exemptions. The only way to know these exemptions is to talking to qualified professionals. I do always recommend an elder law attorney because they're really well-versed in the nuances of this.
And boy, there are nuances.
It's true. And it's
almost
not
the most important attorney you'll ever speak to in many ways.
It's so true. And it's different than a trust and estates attorney. You know, I always say going to your attorney is like going to the doctor. You're going to go to your general practitioner, your internist for your annual checkup. You know, you're not going to walk into urgent care, though, for a cardiac, you know, when you need a specialized cardiologist. Speak to people who know what they're doing and specialize in this field. Because, again, the laws are ever changing. The look back periods are changing. There are exemptions. There are ways to protect your spouse, protect your home, protect your children. But you can't do that when the crisis is set in and you're just scrambling to look for help. Some examples of exceptions are personal belongings, which are clothing, household furnishings, your car, your burial plot, a prepaid funeral contract. That's why people have to go and make their funeral plans when they're doing this Medicaid eligibility process. They will allow you to have funds set aside for your burial and not count them against you as part of your assets when doing your asset calculation. So again, the only way to know is by doing your homework. So I want to share Tina Corlett's information because Greenwich has wonderful resources for seniors. We have a great commission on aging. We have a lot of services in town. So if I may bring that up, her name is Tina Corlett. She's a licensed clinical social worker. She's with the Greenwich Department of Human Services, one of the many great resources available in Greenwich. And her direct line is 203-622-3744. That's 622-3744. Questions on Medicaid, questions on possible Medicaid eligibility, I would certainly call her and not think twice of it. Her email address also, call her. It's better. Call. It's more direct than email. 622-3744. We're sorry she couldn't be with us today, but she was tending to one of her clients who had an emergency situation. And it's just a testament to the level of care that the Greenwich town workers have who are dealing with human services and commission on aging. They go above and beyond for their clients. So while we're here, a quick plug. Tim Judge is working on the next issue of Coming of Age, coming out weekly, we hope. Tim, what is the focus of the next issue? What's our theme?
The theme on this one is, well, you have a great article from Dr. Redcross. Is that right?
Yes.
And he is a concierge medicine.
Concierge medicine expert. We're going to break down the myths. We're going to explain it. We're also going to talk about a lot of great issues, fun, lighthearted articles as well. So we'll keep you posted on that. Boys, thank you for talking to me today.
Well, this was a good show.
I think it was a great show. So this is Jen Graziano thanking you for taking the time to listen as we took the time to talk. Have a great day, Greenwich. Watch the snow and slush on the ground. We'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the station you grew up with, 1490 WGCH, Greenwich.
Shutdown, advancing a bill. I'm John Trout. That budget bill must be signed by midnight Friday to avoid another partial government shutdown. Congressional rules may have to be waived to move any measure through the House and on to the Senate for review. Sunland Serfati has...